This is tape three, side one, Thursday, December the 22nd. We are making this tape for the Pittsburgh section of the National Council of Jewish Women Oral History. This is Howard Braun and Harold Kimball interviewing Paul Cohen.
Right.
Paul, would you please start by stating name? All right. Last time, Paul, we covered pretty much your overall career in outline form. We'd like a little more detail. For example, you told us that you worked on liquid boron control and hydrogen overpressure control on PWRs, but what other programs and specifically what plants did these were these names of reactor plants and programs that you worked on? We'll stop.
The first plant I worked on was the submarine thermal reactor. That's just the submarine prototype propulsion system that the Navy was trying to develop. As I think I mentioned before, that was one, nuclear was one of three possible technologies that the Navy was exploring, and the others have gone into the limbo of history. The nuclear one succeeded. And actually, I was hired by Westinghouse to do some corrosion experiments on zirconium. And my first job was to develop the equipment for and run the tests of the corrosion of zirconium under very extreme heat transfer conditions, because all previous tests had been done under essentially isothermal conditions. And I continued to work on the water technology problems of the STR and its subsequent, its follow-up projects, the SFR, which is the small fleet reactor, and the S5W, which is ultimately became the missile platform, first missile platform, and ultimately at Venice on the shipping port PWR. When I transferred to the Commercial Atomic Power Department, they had ongoing two projects, the Belzin reactor, which was a small reactor that was built for the Brussels World Fair, and the Yankee Row reactor, which was the first Westinghouse commercial power department reactor. I worked on those and their water technology problems. In connection with that, we have an experimental prototype reactor, the Saxton reactor at Saxton, Pennsylvania, in which we explored the technologies that we were incorporating in the larger designs. And I worked on the Southern California Edison plant, San Onofre, and the Connecticut Yankee plant, which were the first large prototypical power reactors using boron chemical shim. And then when I was transferred to the Advanced Reactors Division, most of my work was devoted to technology, sodium technology problems for the FFTF, which is the Fast Flux Test Facility, for which Westinghouse has the contract, and which was built at the Hanford Reservation in the state of Washington. And during that period until the end of my employment at Westinghouse, I was a consultant to the fuel and PWR divisions of the Nuclear Power Department, and following my retirement in 77.
Well, fuel and what?
And plant department divisions of the Westinghouse.
Mm.
nuclear power department, and since my retirement in 1977, I've been a consultant, among other people, but mostly for EPRI, Electric Power Research Institute.
I'd like to know. Yeah, I'd like to hear specifically what EPRI programs you worked on.
Well, my EPRI work has been confined almost completely to the steam generator problems, okay, which have been one of the major problems in the large-scale application of the pressurized water reactor. I've had relatively little to do with any of the other EPRI programs.
Okay, what can you tell us anything at all about that? Has there been progress made? What were the outstanding
problems? Yes, the industry. There are a whole variety of problems which developed in the application of the PWR steam generator when the sizes were increased from the typical small tea kettles that are used in the submarines to the very, very large units that are required for the large plants.
Mm-hmm.
And they went through a whole string of problems. You know, every time they seemed to have one solved, they would get another.
Mm-hmm.
But the major problems were corrosion of tubes, corrosion of tube support plates, and denting of the contacting tubes, cracking of tubes, and that's about it.
Didn't temperature have a lot to do with this?
Well, the temperatures were higher, but not that much higher.
Mm-hmm. It's funny that you attribute it more to size than to temperature.
Well.
Mm-hmm.
And the designs were modified over a period of time. In response to these problems, EPRI established the Steam Generator Owners Group, which is a collection of owners of plants that were having problems and contributed separate funding, and ultimately amounted to over $50 million for the resolution of these problems.
Mm-hmm.
And they continue to this day.
Wasn't a Pittsburgher the guy in charge? What was
well,
his name?
There were a number. It started out with other people, but it longest term, and the current director of that operation is Stanley Green, formerly of Bettis.
Mm-hmm.
Bettis, Pittsburgh.
Right. Stanley Green of Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh. And from formerly at Bettis.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Is he still with it?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
He's close to retirement.
Yeah, I should think so. I haven't seen him. Wow. Do you have any idea that this travail with a steam generator could have been precluded or forestalled?
Well, there were... That's sort of inside stuff. But... the design was provided by the Heat Transfer Division of Westinghouse in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
It was taken, the art was adopted from the designs of feed water heaters, which the company had designed and manufactured, and which these, of course, operate in a different mode. So that the transfer technology was done fairly blindly,
mm-hmm.
without imaginative mm-hmm. understanding of the differences which might be anticipated.
Mm-hmm.
And it took a long time for these differences to mm-hmm. become apparent to the Westinghouse management.
Mm-hmm.
And... I also was a participant in this, but I think I was among the first to realize what the causes of the problems were, and to call this to the attention of Westinghouse management.
Okay. I think that was a very important phase, which we had overlooked a bit to cover the last time around. I wanted you to say a little bit more about the boron control. Which plants?
The concept of using boron to control the reactivity of water reactors is a very, very old one. It goes back. Patents or disclosures were written in the old Manhattan District days, and there was a program at Bettis for a couple of years to consider the application of boron. To the control problem, but for a variety of reasons this tapered off and didn't amount to anything, mostly because the design selected for the reactor, which was the seed and blanket, did not benefit significantly from such control. And when I, in effect, was transferred to the Commercial Atomic Power Division in 1959 to assist them in implementing a chemical shim control program. This, I think, I did very nicely. When I got there, the program that they had, I found was entirely unsatisfactory, and I had to restructure the program, and it was used as a basis to get a contract from the Atomic Energy Commission for...
What year was this?
59. For development, which was applied to the two reactors programs which Westinghouse was committed to. These were the San Onofre plant and of Southern California Edison and the Connecticut Yankee plant of the New England Electric. And
for San Onofre, that's
S-A-N-O-N-O-F-R-E.
Yeah, I know.
Now, the program which we did was a very thorough one. It had to cover repeat because of the change in the chemistry of the coolant. We had to demonstrate that all of the goodies that we had accomplished in the development of the submarine reactors and the shipping port reactor could be duplicated with boric acid. And this is the way we designed the program. And with some considerable success, and I was important, significant contribution to the licensing of the first plants. I don't know whether it was Connecticut Yankee or San Onofre. But we ran laboratory tests and plant tests in the Saxton reactor and what have you. First find the conditions we had to establish and demonstrate that these were practical, feasible, practical operating conditions. An enormous amount of money and effort had been expended in the development and selection of materials for the system, primary system of the submarine reactors, and it was completely infeasible to repeat this work on an independent basis. So what we simply did is to demonstrate for critical components or critical materials that the modified coolant that we proposed for the power reactors would allow the use of the same material, which means then you could go out and just reorder the same kind of stuff, which made it practical to go commercial. Now, this doesn't really give the nitty-gritty of
But it's good. This is just about, I think, as much as we need it.
The nitty-gritty of the programs, you know, technical. There's a long list here I wrote this morning of the specific technical accomplishments.
So you were associated with probably SCE, that's the Connecticut Yankee plant, and the...
I was essentially associated with all of the water reactor developments up till 1977, 1967 and beyond, because I continued when they formed the Advanced Reactors Division, I was posted to that, and I consulted on the FFTF, which is the Fast Flux Test Facility, which has since been built and operates in Richland, Washington. And at the same time, I was also a consultant to the Fuel Division and the Plant Division, as I mentioned earlier, on water cooling technology problems, zirconium corrosion problems.
For the FFTF, I assume this was secondary side chemistry.
No, the FFTF, no, the sodium chemistry.
There wasn't a secondary plant there.
No, the FFTF has air coolers.
Yeah, right.
But we had steam generator development programs on which I worked very heavily. Mm-hmm.
Okay, even though they were never installed.
I do not know whether any of the Westinghouse designs have ever been installed. I've lost touch with that.
Okay. Are there any other technical areas in the PWR area you want to touch on?
Well, there are two major components of the fuel of the power reactors. These are the fuel cladding and the fuel material itself. And I worked on the corrosion of zirconium over a period of years, primarily in the effects of heat transfer on the corrosion.
At the Bettis or at...
Most of that work was done at Bettis. And I had the contract, we made measurements of the thermal conductivity of the oxide layer on zirconium, which had not been... The only data that was available was on big ceramic blocks of synthetic zirconium oxide. And I am an engineer reporting to Mayland Lou Waldman. One, got some measurements, and two, we developed an analytical approach to the corrosion process as it was affected by heat transfer, which ultimately was significant in the selection of the final alloy, zircaloy 2. There was a zircaloy 1, but it didn't qualify by our analysis. The other was the qualification of uranium dioxide, which is, of course, the fundamental fuel, the basic fuel for the water reactors, both the PWR and the BWR. And the major question was its stability under radiation and exposure to water at the same time. And I ran a major program of radiation testing of fuel elements in which we would make deliberate defects so the water could get into the fuel. And we measured the release and the behavior of fission products from these defective fuel elements and demonstrated that these could be taken into account in design and operation. And was a major factor in the selection, if you want to, for the fuel.
Isn't it pretty clear that these fundamental government-funded programs at Bettis for let's say the clad program and the pellet program, the OxyO2, were basic, necessary, and the fundamentals of...
Oh, yeah, there's no question, but in the first 8 or 9 years of Venice's existence, it set the technological base for the whole industry. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A large part of the industry.
A lot. That's right. So that when we say that nuclear power is exploitation may have been a commercial activity, but so much of the funding...
Well, the fundamentals and the technologies were basic. Things were set in the naval reactor program,
yeah.
But the effective size, mm-hmm. which can be very peculiar, mm-hmm. etc., was a major problem of commercialization, mm-hmm. and that required an enormous amount of effort, which was contributed by the commercial program.
Yeah.
A simple thing like, for instance, the pressure vessel.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not too hard to make a small pressure vessel, a good mm-hmm. sound small pressure mm-hmm. vessel. It gets very, very much more difficult to make a large sound mm-hmm. pressure vessel. Just the technology of handling the steel mm-hmm. and fabricating it, etc.
Mm-hmm.
The same is true with steam generators. Mm-hmm. And you get into the nitty-gritty, etc. And that's where the bodies are buried. That's
yeah.
where
mm-hmm.
many of the difficulties occur. And it takes a long time. This is a characteristic of industrial development. I mean, it's okay to make a bicycle, you know, it's one thing to make a bicycle, another thing to make a Mack truck.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've heard someone remark that the Bettis Zirk program and the fuel interaction issue work there was worth at least $1 billion.
Well, you've got to understand that there were many other organizations who were contracted to the Navy, either through Bettis or directly,
yeah.
who are working on these problems. The Battelle Memorial Institute, for instance, made very significant contributions to the development of the zirconium alloys, etc. But I don't know what it cost. I've made a guess
mm-hmm.
at what it was myself. I think it was less.
Mm-hmm.
That. But the point is,
mm-hmm.
I think it was very, very, even though money was easy to get
mm-hmm.
if you had an idea,
mm-hmm.
and it was liberal in that respect, the program was very cost effective because it was had a very tight technical management and had very little bureaucratic momentum in those days. If you decided on Saturday that you knew what you were doing was wrong, on Monday you were starting something else.
Yeah.
And so you didn't waste money on the continuation of unprofitable lines of endeavor, investigation. So overall, I think it was very cost effective. Now, you could look at individual parts of it and say, oh, God, you threw money down a drain or what have you. And you did on some of the things that didn't work. That was money down a drain, but you had to find out.
Because of a little bureaucracy.
Mm. And...
Did you run into, I'm trying to remember the guy, he was a stress specialist, he was at...
You're talking about Bernie Langer.
Bernie Langer, can you say a word or two about him?
Well, there were a number of, I've tried to list the significant, there aren't too many Jewish people at that.
That's what I'm trying to identify.
And
Bernie
Langer
was one. When was he there and what did he do?
Well, he was there from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And
what was his specialty?
His specialty was the behavior, the practical behavior of metals, of materials of metallic materials under stress, under application. And he made absolutely major contributions to the analysis of those problems. And the resolution here is honored as, a Langer Medal. The ASME to in honor of his contributions, etc. There's a very significant, the design methods that existed at the inception of the program, the mechanical design methods were inadequate, you know what I mean? And he was responsible for getting them changed, altered to the point where they could do the job.
Yeah, I wanted that. Can you think of any others?
Well, the two materials people, Jewish materials people. The two materials people were Ben Lustman.
Yeah, right.
Who was the major metallurgical...
L-U-S-T-M-A-N.
Figure at Bettis in terms of development, and certainly on UO2. And
metallurgist on zirconium, right?
He wrote the book. Co-authored a book, Lustman and Kersey, on zirconium and its alloys. And Zalman Shapiro, of course, who made significant contributions to both the zirconium production and in the early stages and the chemistry and preparation and properties of uranium dioxide, which is the fuel.
There was Lustman, Shapiro, Krasick.
Yeah, well, Sid Krasick was the...
Sidney?
Yeah, Sidney Krasick. Was probably the outstanding scientific figure.
We mentioned him last time, too.
I don't know.
Yeah.
And he ended up by being in charge of the physics work on the submarine reactor and the shipping port PWR. And was, he wrote a classified
submarine
physics manual.
And submarine and
shipping port.
Yeah, shipping port.
Yeah. And then he went on later to work on Minerva project. He was
shipping port. I think he had something to do with later with the commercial PWRs too.
No.
I saw him over there consulting for us.
But he was technical director of the Westinghouse Minerva program.
And technical.
But unfortunately, he left us early.
What did he die of?
He had cancer.
Can I ask a civilian question? Were any of those, the cancer that he had, attributed in any way
None of us worked very much on
that. The managers had very little exposure to
anything.
To radiation.
30. Died of stomach
cancer. I don't put that in. He just died early.
Died early.
I don't want
that. Yeah, okay.
Fantastic. Doesn't want to read about a husband.
Yeah.
Like this, funny. Let's see. There were, there weren't too many others. Bernie Levy, you knew Bernie.
Yes.
And he wasn't the major actor at the Bettis, but he was there.
What did he do?
Yes.
Yeah. Bernie Levy did what?
Yeah. Oh, and
what was this area?
I forget now. It's the mechanical design, and then of course there was. What the heck, Schultz?
Monty Schultz.
Yeah.
Right, I forgot.
Monty Schultz.
What did he do?
Well, he worked on controls.
S-C-H-U-L-T-Z.
Which was
reactor controls.
Yeah, which is a major factor. We had an enormous program on the mechanical aspects of the control problem. And then there's control theory, and Monty wrote a little book, which is
He wrote
very well received, yeah. Sure. Widely used. I don't know. I think it's been used today for all I know.
Mm-hmm. 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 The reactor control. Okay, shut it off.
You want to finish that?